A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's gone all in on the 600 by 400 millimeter Eurobox system and wants to stop the convenience store death spiral. The idea is bulk buying household consumables once every month or two and storing them efficiently. But the real question he's asking is deeper. How do warehouse and logistics professionals actually think about storage planning, and what translates to a domestic environment? He wants packing calculations, divider systems, inventory strategy, the full industrial-to-home translation.
This is exactly where my brain lives. And the timing is right. With inflation pushing more households toward bulk purchasing, the question isn't whether to buy in volume, it's whether you can find the toilet paper 3 months later without excavating a closet.
The archaeology of the pantry. I've seen civilizations collapse under less.
It's not just about finding things. There's a real cognitive load that comes with ambiguous storage. Every time you open a closet and see a heap of vaguely recognizable packaging, your brain has to run a mini inventory. Is there more behind this? Did we finish the chickpeas? Should I buy more? That's decision fatigue, and it compounds daily.
The mess isn't just messy. It's actively costing you mental cycles.
So let's frame this properly. What we're really doing is taking a warehouse manager's mental model, density, accessibility, rotation, pick paths, and porting it into a home storeroom. The container is the 600 by 400 millimeter Eurobox, defined by DIN EN 13427. Same footprint used across European automotive supply chains, hospital logistics, and catering. It's a dimensional constant.
The tension at the heart of this is that industrial storage optimizes for trained pickers with standardized workflows. Home storage has to accommodate someone grabbing a can of chickpeas at 11 p.m. in their socks.
And the industrial picker has a scanner, a pick list, and a supervisor checking accuracy. The home picker has none of that. They have memory, habit, and the ambient hope that the thing they want is roughly where they left it. That's a much harder design problem in some ways. So we'll work through this in layers, packing geometry first, then divider and insert systems, then inventory management, then the full system design. The goal is a storeroom where you know exactly what you have and where it lives.
Let's start with the geometry. What's the warehouse term for how you arrange identical items in a container?
Load patterns, or case packing patterns. It's the systematic arrangement of identical items to maximize density while keeping things stable and pickable. For rectangular packages, the math is straightforward. Divide the box length by the package length, take the floor, multiply by box width divided by package width, take the floor. For cylinders, same formula, but you subtract 5 to 10% to account for the air gap between round objects.
That air gap isn't just wasted space, right? It serves a function.
Without that gap, you can't get your fingers around a can to extract it. In warehouse design, we call this pick clearance. If you pack cylinders so tightly they're touching on all sides, you're effectively creating a friction-locked mass. The first can comes out with a screwdriver. The 5 to 10% allowance is an inefficiency. It's the difference between a functional storage system and a very dense brick of regret.
Cylinders are where it gets interesting because you've got two dominant orientations, vertical standing and horizontal laydown.
Vertical is standard for bottles because it preserves label readability and prevents leakage. Horizontal can achieve higher density for things like paper rolls but risks crushing. Let's walk through the actual numbers for each category Daniel mentioned, starting with toilet paper.
The gateway drug of bulk buying.
A standard Israeli toilet paper roll is about 110 millimeters in diameter and 100 millimeters tall. In the 600 by 400 millimeter footprint, that's 0.24 square meters, vertical packing gives you 5 rolls along the 400 millimeter side and 4 along the 600 side. That's 20 rolls per layer. In a 150 millimeter tall box, that's your lot, one layer.
Respectable, but not life-changing.
Now horizontal laydown. You run the rolls on their sides, 3 across the 400 axis, 5 across the 600 axis, 15 per layer. But now you can stack 3 to 4 layers high in a 400mm box. That's 45 to 60 rolls. Horizontal is the bulk storage champion for toilet paper. Keep a shallow vertical box for daily bathroom access and a deep horizontal box in the storeroom for restocking.
The daily box is the pick face, and the deep box is reserve storage.
Already thinking like a warehouse manager. Let's do kitchen paper rolls. These are taller, about 230 millimeters high, and 120 in diameter. They have to stand vertically because laying them down would crush the roll. 5 along the 400 side, 3 along the 600 side, 15 per layer. Minimum box height is 250 millimeters. 2 layers in a 500 millimeter box gives you 30 rolls.
Daniel mentioned these specifically.
Standard 750 milliliter bottle, 75 millimeters diameter, 300 millimeters tall. Standing up, you fit 8 along the 600 side and 5 along the 400 side. That's 40 bottles per layer. But wine is typically stored on its side to keep the cork moist. Horizontal, running lengthwise along the 600 axis, you get 2 bottles deep and 5 across, 10 per layer. Stack 2 layers in a 200 millimeter box, that's 20 bottles. I'd recommend molded wine bottle inserts, 12 or 6 bottle grids for stability. They're standard in European beverage logistics from suppliers like Rarid Pacific and IFCO.
40 standing versus 20 lying down. That's a real trade-off if you're not aging the wine and just need storage density.
That trade-off depends entirely on your consumption pattern. If you're buying wine to drink within a month, standing storage is perfectly fine. The cork won't dry out in that time frame. The horizontal storage rule is for medium to long-term aging, 6 months plus. So a practical household system might use standing storage in the active pick face box and horizontal only for the reserve box in the storeroom. You get density where you need it and cork preservation where you need it.
You're not just applying rules blindly. You're matching the orientation to the actual use case.
That's the whole game. Rules without context are just rituals. And now the one that's specifically Israeli, the 1.5 liter soft drink bottle, this is where Daniel's location really matters. Israeli 1.5 liter bottles are taller and narrower than European or North American ones, about 90 millimeters in diameter and 320 millimeters tall. 600 divided by 90 gives you 6.66, so 6 bottles. 400 divided by 90 gives you 4.44, so 4, 24 bottles per layer. Minimum box height is 350 millimeters. You cannot stack a second layer without crushing the caps, so 24 per box is your practical maximum.
Compare that to a North American 2-liter bottle, and you get a completely different number.
A North American 2-liter is wider and shorter. You might only fit 4x3, 12 per layer, but you might get 2 layers. This is why one of Daniel's key points is so important. Measure your actual products. Don't trust generic guides. Israeli 1.5 liter bottles are their own dimensional species.
Can drinks seem like they'd be the density champion?
Standard 330 milliliter can, 66 millimeters diameter, 115 millimeters tall. 600 divided by 66 is 9.09, so 9. 400 divided by 66 is 6.06, so 6. 54 cans per layer. Stack 2 layers in a 250 millimeter box, that's 108 cans. The highest density consumable in the entire system. A single box holds more than 4 24 packs.
That's almost offensive. 108 cans in one box, the sheer weight alone.
That box would weigh about 36 kilograms. You'd want it on a lower shelf. And this is where domestic storage hits a real ergonomic constraint that warehouses solve with forklifts. You're not forklifting a Euro box off a shelf in your storeroom, so for high-density heavy items like canned drinks, I'd actually recommend splitting into two shallower boxes, 54 cans each, rather than one deep 108-can monster. You preserve the density math, but make the box actually liftable by a human being.
That's the kind of practical translation Daniel needs. The math says one thing, but your spine says another.
Your spine is a legitimate design constraint. Now, cleaning products, these are the rebels. Spray bottles, trigger handles, irregular jug shapes, you can't pack them tight. A 600 by 400 by 200 millimeter box with dividers fits roughly 6 to 8 standard 750 milliliter spray bottles. Loose packing with adjustable dividers is the only practical approach.
Dry food staples, rice, pasta, flour.
Best stored either in original packaging or transferred to rectangular containers that tessellate. A 1 kilogram rice bag is roughly 150 by 80 by 40 millimeters. 600 divided by 150 is 4. 400 divided by 80 is 5. 20 bags per layer. 3 layers in a 150 millimeter box gives you 60 bags. For bulk, a 5 kilogram bag is about 300 by 200 by 80 millimeters. 2 by 2, 4 bags per layer, 2 layers, 8 bags in a 200 millimeter box.
Batteries and light bulbs are the odd ones out. Small, fragile, completely different handling requirements.
Batteries are small and uniform. Use adjustable dividers to create a 4x6 grid of 50 by 50 millimeter cells. Each cell holds 4 to 6 AA batteries. That's roughly 100 to 150 batteries in a 600 by 400 by 100 millimeter box. Light bulbs need molded foam inserts with cutouts for standard bulb shapes. A 19 GU10 candle. A 4x6 grid of 90 millimeter diameter cutouts gives you 24 bulbs per layer. 2 layers, 48 bulbs in a 200 millimeter box. Foam is essential here. Without it, you're just storing future glass shards.
We've got the packing math. Now the question is, once you've crammed 108 cans into a box, how do you actually organize the system so you're not just creating a very dense mess?
This is where dividers and inserts come in. There are 3 categories used in logistics and catering. First, adjustable dividers, plastic or metal slotted rails that create a grid. Most flexible, good for mixed products in one box. Brands like Schuler Alibert and SSI Schaefer offer standard 600 by 400 millimeter divider kits. Polypropylene ones are highly durable. Corrugated plastic is cheaper but wears faster. Fixed molded inserts, custom molded plastic trays for specific products. These are what beverage distributors use for 12 bottle wine grids and 24 can soft drink trays. Highest durability, best for high turnover items. Available off the shelf from Regrid Pacific and IFCO for standard bottle and can sizes. Custom cut foam, polyethylene or polyurethane foam with cutouts. Best for fragile items like light bulbs and electronics. You can order these from foam fabricators. But foam degrades over time with repeated insertion and removal, so it's not a forever solution.
When do you use which?
Adjustable dividers for mixed household consumables, cleaning products, dry goods. Fixed molded inserts for high volume single product items like wine and canned drinks. Custom foam for fragile or oddly shaped items. The mistake people make is jumping straight to custom foam for everything because it looks professional. It's expensive, it wears out, and it's overkill for a bag of pasta. Adjustable dividers handle 80% of household consumables.
I've seen that impulse. People want the Pelican case aesthetic for their pantry, and they spend more on foam than on the food inside.
6 months later, the foam is torn. The cutouts are stretched, and they're back to loose items rattling around. Meanwhile, a $5 adjustable divider is still doing its job perfectly. The unsexy solution is usually the right one.
Now we know what fits in a box and how to divide it. But the real operational question Daniel's asking is, should each box hold one product, or should you mix?
This is where the pick face versus reserve storage distinction matters. In a warehouse, the pick face is the location you access daily. It should contain one SKU for fastest retrieval. Use shallow boxes, 100 to 150 millimeters, with dividers for easy visual scanning. Reserve storage is the deep boxes, 300 to 600 millimeters, holding multiple layers of the same product, accessed monthly for replenishment.
The one SKU per box rule.
In commercial operations, mixing SKUs in a single bin increases pick time by 30 to 50% because the picker has to search. Studies back this up consistently. For home use, you can relax the rule for low-frequency items. Mixing cleaning products in one box is fine if you only grab one per month. But for high-frequency items like toilet paper and pasta, dedicate the box. The mental cost of searching through a mixed box every single day adds up.
The rule is, if you touch it weekly, it gets its own box. If you touch it monthly, it can share.
That's a good heuristic. Now let's talk inventory management principles that actually translate to a home. First, FIFO, first in, first out, critical for dry food. Arrange boxes so new stock goes behind old. Use date labels on boxes. This is non-negotiable for anything with a shelf life.
For non-perishables like toilet paper.
Min-max levels. Define a minimum quantity, say 4 rolls of toilet paper, and a maximum, say 48. When inventory hits the minimum, it's time to bulk buy. This prevents both stockouts and the situation where you accidentally buy a pallet of paper towels because you forgot you already had 6 months' worth.
The Kanban system. Daniel mentioned wanting to understand replenishment methods.
The Tuben Kanban system originated in Toyota's manufacturing system and is now widely used in hospital supply chains. The idea is simple. One box in active use, one full box as backup. When the active box empties, you swap and reorder. For a household, this is transformative. One box of 48 toilet paper rolls in the bathroom closet, one box of 48 in the storeroom. Bathroom box empties, you swap, and the empty box becomes your reorder signal. You never run out, and you never overorder.
That alone eliminates the 11 p.m. convenience store run.
And the beauty of the Tuben system is that it converts a memory task into a physical trigger. You don't have to remember to check the toilet paper supply. The empty box in your hand is the signal. It's impossible to ignore. That's the core insight from lean manufacturing. Don't rely on people to remember things. Build the reminder into the physical environment.
That's what separates this from just buying in bulk and shoving it in a closet. The system does the remembering.
Labeling is what makes the whole system legible. Use barcode or QR code labels on each box. Free tools exist for generating these, and cheap thermal label printers make it easy. Attach a master inventory list to the storeroom door. For low-tech, color-coded stickers by category, blue for paper goods, green for food, red for cleaning. The key is that the label goes on the short 400mm face, which faces outward on a shelf. Use a dry erase marker on polypropylene boxes. It wipes off when contents change.
The physical layout of the storeroom itself.
Zone by frequency. High-frequency items, toilet paper, pasta, coffee, at waist to shoulder height on open shelving. Low-frequency items, light bulbs, batteries, holiday decorations, on lower or higher shelves. Use standard shelving that's 600mm deep, so Euroboxes sit flush. Avoid shelves deeper than 600. They create dead zones behind boxes where things go to be forgotten.
The archaeological layer we mentioned earlier.
Leave 10-15% empty space per shelf. Warehouse professionals call this breathing room. It allows easy box removal and prevents jamming. A shelf packed to the millimeter is a shelf you'll dread using. Also, consider a shadow board near the storeroom door, a pegboard or magnetic strip holding frequently accessed items like scissors, tape, and a marker, so you're not carrying tools in and out.
I love the shadow board idea. It's one of those things that seems like overkill until you realize you've walked back to the kitchen 3 times for the same pair of scissors.
Every trip you eliminate is a tiny victory. So if someone's listening and wants to implement this, where do they actually start? Daniel's prompt is asking for a practical reference.
Start with the big 3 high-density items, toilet paper, canned drinks, and dry pasta. They pack most efficiently and give the fastest return on investment for system setup time. You'll see the space savings immediately. Buy adjustable dividers first. A set of 4-6 slotted rails costs roughly $20-$30 and handles 80% of household consumables. Only invest in molded inserts for wine and canned drinks if you consume those in volume. Custom foam should be your last purchase, not your first. Implement the Tuben system for your top 5 most used consumables. This alone eliminates convenience store runs and reduces decision fatigue. You stop thinking about whether you need toilet paper because the system tells you. Label everything with a date and quantity on the outward-facing 400mm side. Dry erase marker on polypropylene. When the contents change, you wipe and rewrite. No permanent labels, no sticker residue, no confusion. Measure your actual product dimensions. I cannot stress this enough. Israeli 1.5-liter bottles are not European 1.5-liter bottles. The 90mm diameter versus a wider European bottle changes your packing count from 24 to potentially 16 or 18 per layer. That's a 30% difference. Measure your specific brands with a caliper if you have one.
It strikes me that what Daniel's really asking about isn't storage at all. It's about reclaiming mental bandwidth.
That's the deeper layer. When you know exactly where everything is and exactly when to reorder, you stop thinking about household logistics. The system does the remembering. You walk into the storeroom, grab what you need from a labeled box at waist height, and leave. The two-bin system flags replenishment. The min-max levels prevent overbuying. The dedicated SKU boxes eliminate searching.
It's the domestic equivalent of a well-run parts department.
And the open question is how far this can scale. Could a household run entirely on Eurobox-based inventory management with a digital inventory tracker and automated reorder lists? The technology exists. Barcode scanners, inventory apps, even simple spreadsheets. The barrier isn't technical, it's the upfront effort of measuring, labeling, and systematizing. But once it's done, the maintenance cost is near zero.
As 3D printing gets cheaper, custom inserts for specific Israeli products, like those 1.5 liter bottle grids, could be designed and shared as open source files. You print exactly what you need for your specific brands.
That's the future. Localized, product-specific inserts that maximize density for the exact items you buy, not generic approximations. The Eurobox becomes a platform, and the inserts become the customization layer.
The system isn't just about boxes. It's a framework for not having to think about things that don't deserve thinking about.
That's the real payoff. The Eurobox is just the container. What it contains is reclaimed attention.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the late Victorian period, observers on the Bay of Fundy near Newfoundland noted that, during a tidal bore, a wave traveling upstream against the river's current, the churning water sometimes appeared to glow faintly at night, an optical effect caused by bioluminescent microorganisms being violently agitated and concentrated along the bore's leading edge.
The ocean was basically making its own nightlight.
Bioluminescent tidal bores. Not where I thought that was going. The Eurobox system isn't about optimizing storage for its own sake. It's about building a domestic infrastructure that fades into the background. You invest the effort once, measuring, labeling, setting min-max levels, establishing the two-bin rhythm, and then you stop thinking about it. The boxes do the work. The labels do the remembering. And you get back the mental space that used to be occupied by wondering whether you're out of pasta.
That's the pitch. Not tidier shelves. A quieter mind.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps more people find the show. We'll be back with another one soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.